रामाय रामभद्राय रामचंद्राय वेदसे रघुनाथाय नाथाय सीताय पतये नमः. आई डेकान चैप्टर नंबर 52. राम सीता एंड लक्ष्मण क्रॉस द रिवर गंगा. द रेसिटेशन बिगिंस नाउ. At daybreak, Rama, the favorite of fame and valor, turned to Lakshmana and said, "My dear boy, the Lord of the day sends his messenger, the ruddy dawn, to announce his approach. The shades of night are fading fast. Lo, yon black cuckoo welcomes us with melodious song. Did you notice that the cry of the wild peacocks is more sonorous and piercing than that of the tame ones we have at Ayodhya? The broad stream of the Ganga and its strong current preclude any possibility of crossing it without a boat. Make the necessary arrangements." Lakshmana communicated Rama's orders to Guha and Sumantra. The forest king bent his head in low obeisance and ordered his ministers to have in readiness a fine barge at the ferry to cross the river safe and soon. They should carefully look to it that it is duly provided with good oars, rudders, and sail. A skillful helmsman should be in attendance to take them over comfortably. It was done, and Guha approached Rama respectfully and said, "Master, the boat awaits you at yon landing place. I think you crossed the river in it safely enough. What are your orders? I pray you get into it." "You have done more than enough," replied Rama. "See that our spades, baskets, clothes, ornaments, and weapons are arranged in it." Then Rama and Lakshmana donned their armor, girt their quivers and swords, and moved on to the landing place. Sumantra, noticing that Rama ordered not the chariot to follow, bowed in low reverence and said, "Lord, what are my orders?" To which Rama replied all gently, laying his hand upon his arm, "Sumantra, my dear, see that you return on the wings of speed to the side of our king. His orders were that we should drive thus far. We proceed afoot to the forest from here, so you need not trouble yourself further on our account." The aged minister understood that he was ordered to return to Ayodhya, and with a face from which all joy, all peace had departed, he ventured to submit. "Do you for a moment think that anyone in this wide world relishes your unfortunate lot to dwell for long years in these forests like homeless wanderers and Lakshmana and Sita with you? If your noble self be thus a target for the sorrows of adversity, it seems to me as clear as anything that there is no merit, not the slightest, in celibacy, study of the Vedic lore, compassion or righteousness. If it were otherwise, how is it that they bear no fruit in you, whom all graces combine to adorn? You have chosen to dwell in the dark forests in the company of Lakshmana and Sita, and you have ensured for yourself unparalleled fame as a lord of the three worlds, like unto Mahavishnu, who strode over the universe in three paces. At first, our hearts rejoiced at the anticipated life of happiness and content when you should sit on the throne of your fathers. But cruel Kaikeyi dashed the cup from our lips. Later on, it seemed as if you'd allow us to accompany you in your exile, but you cast heavy sleep over us and silently took yourself away from our midst. Therein too, we have been cruelly deceived by your good self. Yet I entertained a last hope that you will be pleased to allow me, at least your old and faithful servant, to serve you, and now you have put your foot down upon it firmly and irrevocably. You have disappointed me in this too. Whichever way we turn, we are confronted with the ruins of our hopes and aspirations. And as if this were not suffering enough, you have arranged to leave us to the tender mercies of that monstrous sinner Kaikeyi. Eternal hopeless woe and despair are our only portion." He despaired of seeing once again Rama, dearer to him than his very life, and wept aloud long and ruefully out of the bitterness of his heart. He controlled himself somewhat and sipped water to purify himself when Rama addressed him gently and said, "The kings of the Ikshvaku line never had a more faithful friend than yourself. I lay this duty upon you to see that my father grieves not on my account. The snows of age lie heavily on him, and he has been till now the absolute ruler of a vast empire. He has drained the cup of life to the full, but his last years were doomed to see all his fair hopes blighted. Terrible grief has befallen him in that the son of his heart is not by his side to gladden and comfort him. It is why I lay so much stress and importance on your going back to him. We should obey and follow our elders and masters, and it is all unmeet that we should seek to drag them down to our level. So the king should be instantly obeyed to the utmost, whatever he might order to delight the heart of the queen Kaikeyi. No one should gainsay kings, even if they act out of anger or misplaced affection. It is not for nothing that they are placed over us as our rulers. So behave that the king is not a prey to grief or disappointment. He is our lord and ruler, hoary with age of restrained senses. He is adorned with every noble virtue. He has been an utter stranger to anxiety or grief. Convey my humble respects to him with a prayer. May not your noble heart grieve in the least at the fancied thought that I, nor Lakshmana, nor Sita, ever bewail our sojourn in the forest, or recall with regret the years we spent at Ayodhya. I look forward happily to lay my head at your royal feet at the end of 14 years, which will pass away as 14 seconds. Next, convey my respectful inquiries to my mother and her friends, and last but not least to Lady Kaikeyi. Sita, Lakshmana and myself clasp with humble reverence the feet of Queen Kaushalya. Take it from me to our monarch that it would be for the best to bring down Bharata as soon as possible and have him crowned in all pomp and glory, for that is the surest antidote to the heartache engendered of my absence from the side of my father. And to Bharata, take this loving message. I would have you behave towards the royal ladies with as much respect and devotion as you would to the monarch himself. As Kaikeyi, your mother, is to you our Sumitra, the mother of Shatrughna, and Kaushalya, my mother. Entrusted with the noble office of heir apparent by our gracious king, you have it in your power to win happiness and fame here and hereafter. This was a clear order for Sumitra to return. Yet his overwhelming grief and the close intimacy that had been his privilege to enjoy with Rama since his birth emboldened him to say, I crave permission to submit somewhat. It is no empty compliment or a courtier's flattery. Your humble servant am I, yet I have chosen to forget it and speak thus boldly. My supreme devotion to you and affection are my only excuse for it. How can I bring myself to enter Ayodhya all alone, which grieves even as a fond father from whom cruel death has taken away his only son upon whom he lavished all his love? Those that till now had beheld me ever with you in this chariot will, I'm sure, die of broken hearts if they were to see my miserable self go back with your place in it empty. They will cast their eyes upon the stately vehicle unilluminated by your presence and will faint with grief, even as a mighty army scatters itself when they see the driver sitting lone and forlorn in their general's chariot. Time and distance is nothing to them, for they ever enjoy your presence in their mind's eye. Food and sleep distract not their thoughts ever centered in yourself. You had some idea of what they suffered when you drove out of the city. Their confusion of heart and heaviness of spirits are simply beyond description. Heard you not the mighty sound that rose from them wailing when you started on your fateful journey? Verily, I know not what would become of them if I were to go there alone and ill-omened with black tidings for them. What message shall I take to Kaushalya? Shall I say, I drove your son to his uncle's capital, concern yourself not about him? Sweet words, but all untrue. Or shall I speak the truth and say, I took leave of your son when the dark forest swallowed his bright form. Alas, the noble queen would die on the spot as if struck by lightning. I know not what to do. Well, it is best to be silent. I may steel my heart to go back, but these horses will never have it so. They have borne all joyfully Sita, Lakshmana, and your noble self, and they will utterly refuse to draw the chariot if you are not in it. Now, how can I go back to Ayodhya without you? Grant me, out of your boundless compassion, to share your forest home. If you still turn a deaf ear to my prayers and harden your heart, that very instant I will mount the chariot and throw myself along with it into the raging flames. As a bit I could from the car, keep away everything, man or beast, that might interfere with your tapasya. I have known it long ages ago that you are to take human form in the line of Ikshvaku. So I mastered this art of chariot driving, looked down by gentle folk, and heeded not my state or dignity as a member of the monarch's council, only to secure a chance to serve you by driving your chariot. And you have been gracious enough to confer upon me that envied honor. I but ask to be continued in my service to you during your stay in the forest. Grant me the precious boon of ever being with you. These horses will secure happy states of existence hereafter by rendering you humble service in the forest. On my head and eyes be it to serve you in every possible way, day or night. Nor Ayodhya, nor the bright world of the gods, nor the serene place of liberation has any chance for me. Desperate sinners can never hope to enter paradise. How can I, blacker than any, enter Ayodhya without you? My heart longs to remain with you through your period of exile and drive you back to Ayodhya in this very chariot. The 14 years will flash away even as 14 winks of an eye if I am with you. But away from your delightful presence, every second is an eternity of torment to me. Was there ever a master that loved his servant so well as yourself? Is it not but bare justice that my place is ever with the son of my lord and master? I entreat you not to leave me behind. My mind is made up to be wherever you are. Rama was by nature supremely compassionate to all beings, and to such as sought refuge with him and knew no other protector, to such servants of his, he evinced boundless affection and sympathy. So he turned to Sumantra and said, I am yet to see another servant like yourself, faithful to the uttermost to his masters. No one knows better than I your love and devotion to me. Would I ask you to go back to Ayodhya if I had not serious reasons for it? First and foremost, Kaikeyi will rest assured that I obeyed her commands and have repaired to the forest. She will be delighted thereat and regard the virtuous king as a man of his word. Bharata will get the throne and realize to the full the heart wishes of Kaikeyi. This is my first duty and must be looked to at once. So have the kindness to return to the city and convey my messages to the respective parties. And he consoled the broken-hearted Sumantra as best as he could. He next addressed himself to Guha and said, you should not insist upon my taking up my abode here with you. It is too near the city. My father's orders require me to dwell in some holy hermitage, and my resolve too lies that way. Again, Kaikeyi has said, you shall abide for 14 years in the forests of Dandaka with matted hair and clad in deerskin and bark of trees. I mean to observe such vows and observances as will compel the wonder and admiration of the very hermits themselves and ensure unexampled bliss in the other worlds for myself, Sita, and Lakshmana. And now, dear friend, it is time that I matted my hair. Oblige me by sending for the milk of the banyan tree. It was done. Rama and Lakshmana matted their hair and took upon themselves the life and duties of the hermits according to the Vaikunasa mode. Rama matted his hair. Rama with long arms that reached down to his knees like a trunk of an elephant. Rama adorned with every excellence of body, mind and heart. Woe unspeakable! Yet Rama and Lakshmana shone with boundless radiance like Maharishis even in that lowly garb. Friend, said Rama to Guha, continue your watchful care over your kingdom, its fortresses, troops, and treasures, and walk down to the landing place. The barge waited him there. Lakshmana, said he, see to it carefully that the noble daughter of Janaka gets into the boat first and take your place in it. Lakshmana guessed his purpose and obeyed his brother accordingly. Rama got in last and recited the mantras prescribed for Brahmanas and Kshatriyas to ensure a safe passage across the rivers. They then sipped water from the holy stream and bowed in reverence to it. Rama then graciously dismissed Sumantra, Guha and his followers, took his seat and ordered the rowers to give way. They set themselves to the joyful task with a will, and the barge was nearing the middle of the stream when Sita clasped reverent hands and prayed, Mother Ganga, may my lord and master sojourn for 10 years and 4 in the forest, keeping well his promise to the king and return safe and happy to Ayodhya with Lakshmana and myself. Then will I render worship meet and adoration to you. You course through the heavens, the earth, and the nether worlds. You begin to manifest yourself in the world of Brahma, and the Lord of the ocean is your happy spouse. Mother Divine, I bow my head to you in reverence and raise my voice in humble prayer. Grant me that my Lord returns safe and happy and sits on the throne of his ancestors, and I will give away to the holy Brahmanas countless kind clothes and sweet food. On my return to Ayodhya, my first care shall be to worship you, the other deities here, Manikarnika and the other sacred bathing places, Kashi and the other sanctified spots, with offerings of various kinds of fruits and thousands of honey pots. I pray you fulfill the dearest wish of my heart that the righteous brother should live their period of exile in peace and happiness and return to Ayodhya in safety. Meanwhile, the barge touched the other bank and they got down from it. Then Rama turned to Lakshmana and said, henceforth, we are to live by ourselves in these forests where man lives not. So I enjoin you to look after the safety of Sita and give your best attention to it. Lead the way, Sita comes after you, and I walk in the rear, guarding you as it were. Henceforth, we must watch over one another. There has been no occasion till now to call forth our endurance and fortitude. Sita will, this day, have a taste of what the rough forest life is like. She is to enter the forest proper, untenanted by man, with no villages or hamlets, to relieve the vast loneliness and cut up by rough uneven paths interspersed with deep chasms. Accordingly, Lakshmana took his place in the front, Sita followed next, and Rama came last. Sumantra gazed long and steadily at Rama as he crossed the Ganga and proceeded beyond. Then distance gradually blurred the fair vision, and he raised his voice and wept in the bitterness of his heart. Rama resembles in might the Lord of the planets. He has it in him to accomplish to the utmost the wishes of those that depend upon him. Still, as became a great one, he bound himself to obey the commands of his elders and underwent many a trouble. They crossed the river Ganga. They entered the kingdom of Matsyas, rich in wealth and corn and teeming with its happy millions. The brothers had to kill the wild boar, the white-footed antelope, the spotted antelope and a maharuru, which is a species of deer, and other animals that sought to attack them, and at sunset sought the foot of a large tree and had their first forest meal. Mangalam Koshalendraya Mahaniya Gunabdiye Chakravarti Dhanurjaya Sarva Bhomaya Mangalam.